Fisheries Committee to order, or Military and Veterans Affairs Committee to order. A lot of the same people sat on those same committees. Let the record reflect that it is 1:07 p.m. on Tuesday, March 27th, 2012. Present today, we have Representative Osterman, Representative Lynn, Representative Miller, and myself, Representative Thompson. Co-chair Representative Sadler will be joining us a little later in the meeting. Before we start, please turn off your cell phones. Just turning the vibrate in this room still doesn't work. They interfere with the recording system. Today's meeting, we're going to be hearing House Bill 366 by request of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. It's an act establishing the Alaska Intrastate Mutual Aid System and relating to the duties of the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and the duties of the Alaska State Emergency Response Commission. It's my intention to hear this bill today and move it out of committee, if it is the will of the committee. We'll also be hearing Senate Joint Resolution 14, sponsored by Senator Wilkowski. This is urging the United States Department of Defense to protect military bases and military personnel in the state for the defense and protection of the state and the nation. It's also my intention to hear this resolution today and pass it out of committee, if it's the will of the committee. Our first order of business will be House Bill 366. Here to introduce the bill is Representative Feige and his aide, Mike Pascal. Representative Feige, if you'd please come forward, place your name on the record, and explain to us the Senate Bill 366, or House Bill 366. I'm getting too many things going at once here. Go right ahead.
Chairman, members of the committee, on the record, Representative Eric Feige, House District 12. House Bill 366 is a committee bill from the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and you may be wondering, okay, why is Feige up here pitching the bill? We, on my staff, we have some pretty good expertise regarding emergency services and incident command and that kind of thing. So just in general, the bill is something that has been requested on part of the emergency services community within the state. A lot of the elements of it have been crafted by that community, and because we have the, or because I have that expertise on my staff, we're the ones that will be carrying the bill. So without further ado, I'll pass the baton here to Mike Pascal, one of my staff. So thank you.
We have been joined by Representative Sisna also.
Members of the committee, Michael Pascal and staff to Representative Feige. I will, for Representative Feige and myself, just so that we're sure we stay out of trouble, make sure and disclose that I am assistant chief and a board member of a fire department that may fall under this agreement, and that I chair the Delta Greeley Local Emergency Planning Committee, which may be asked to participate in planning activities under this agreement, and a member of the State of Alaska Inoperable Communications Committee that falls under the State Emergency Response Commission. And the Representative Feige is the chief of the Chicoloon Volunteer Fire Department.
Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. According to the Federal Emergency Management Agency Mutual Aid Agreements and Assistance Agreement, that's are between agencies, organizations, and jurisdictions that provide a mechanism to quickly obtain emergency assistance in the form of personnel, equipment, materials, and other associated services. The primary objective is to facilitate rapid, short-term deployment of emergency services prior to, during, and after an incident. Through the Emergency Management Assistance Compact, or EMAC, all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have all agreed and established guidelines to provide aid across state borders. Across Alaska, local organizations adjacent to each other sometimes have agreements to provide assistance in the event of emergency, often within the same political subdivision. When the incident commander needs additional resources, such as an ambulance, established procedures work to make the aid available. Unlike the EMAC that allows response across state borders and local agreements that provide assistance for isolated incidents, Alaska has no unified agreement in place allowing one political subdivision to assist another. Although assistance can be obtained, all the details concerning the cost, responsibility, liability, and other items have to be negotiated on a situation-by-situation basis. When an event occurs, people work to continue the operation or the reestablishment of services. Time is not available to negotiate items such as who will pay for the transportation costs to an area, who is responsible for maintenance of the equipment that's involved, who can terminate an employee, and other such items. House Bill 366 and its companion in the other body, SB 208, will put in place a tool that will make assisting those in need easier for us here in Alaska. This process is not just about typical emergency services such as fire, police, emergency medical. It also includes everything from water and sewer treatment facilities, electric and other utilities, fuel delivery, all of the services that individuals expect to be available to them before, during, and after an emergency. The National Emergency Management Association, NEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association, FEMA, and interested response organizations developed model legislation for an interstate mutual aid system. A copy of the model legislation was provided to you. The bill before you is an adoption from this model legislation. It was developed by the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management here in Alaska in conjunction with several organizations, including the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, the Alaska Municipal League, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Section 1 of the bill requires the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management to play an integral role in the developing and implementing of the interstate mutual aid system established by the bill. Section 2 requires the division coordinate the operation of the agreement or IMAS. Section 3 addresses the State Emergency Response Commission and requires the commission to make recommendations about IMAS and adopt regulations necessary to carry out the agreement. Section 4 requires the Commission to review and make recommendations about the mutual aid system. And Section 5 actually establishes the mutual aid system between participating political subdivisions, provides that every political subdivision is a participating member unless the subdivision withdraws, provides what assistance a political subdivision may request, addresses qualifications and employment of and workers' compensation for emergency responders, establishes reimbursement procedures, tort liability for participating political subdivisions, and provides definitions for the provisions establishing the mutual aid system. Okay. We have several individuals available to testify, one in person and several by phone, on this bill that I believe all support the bill, and I would also be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the bill or the concept.
We've been joined in the room by Representative Munoz also. Welcome. Okay, Representative Osterman has a question.
I've got a couple. Let's start with the commission. You refer to the commission. What commission are you referring to?
The State Emergency Response Commission. And that
is already established in...
Yes, sir. That is established and it consists of several of the department commissioners, representatives of local government, local emergency planning agencies, both in urban and rural settings as a cross-section throughout the state, as well as there's some federal partners that's on that committee, I believe, as non-voting members.
And
go right ahead.
The commission then would help set up this system, the Alaska Interstate Mutual Aid System. That'll be established through the commission.
Representative Osterman, through the chair. Yes, it's established through the division and the commission. The commission has certain duties outlined in statute, and then the division has certain duties outlined in statute, both existing activities as well as those that would fall under the intrastate agreement.
Follow-up question. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, so I didn't hear this in any other committee, so I'm trying to understand how the system that we're talking about, the mutual aid system that you're talking about here, does it have somebody who coordinates all of this information and coordinates any kind of a disaster that comes along? And is that done through the department? And do they have staff to do that already? I'm just trying to understand the whole thing, how it would flow once it's implemented.
Representative Osterman, through the chair. It depends on exactly which activity you're speaking of. The state, through its Emergency Response Center would coordinate activities at the state level if it was a state disaster. If it's an individually locally declared disaster, it would be between the two political subdivisions. I believe Brian Fisher with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management is available, and he would be the most likely, he would be able to provide you a better explanation of answers to those questions, but it would depend on the scale of the emergency. The inventory of equipment and activities skill levels, those types of things are already being maintained at different levels within both local and state government. So the division already has much of the information available. It would be a question, if I needed a particular asset, do I contact a neighboring community or do I contact the state and ask them to obtain it for me? And it would depend on the equipment and the emergency. But it's to put everybody in a position where we're working together under the same guidelines in the event that that type of activity is needed.
And Mr. Chairman, I know the fiscal note in here from the department says zero, and so there's no cost associated with implementing this mutual aid system?
Representative Osterman, through the chair. The system itself, much of the information is already in place and already developed. The cost that occurs is in the event of a disaster, and that's part of what's provided for in the bill is how those costs are paid, what costs are paid by the responding agency, and what are paid by the requesting agency. The division, and again, Brian Fisher or whoever's from the division would be able to speak better to, but their personnel already provide many of the services and information that's here and that exists in this bill. It's just a codifying it all into an agreement.
One final question.
Go right ahead.
And if there is a natural or some kind of a disaster and people respond, do they have to have an agreement prior to responding? If they don't have an agreement prior to responding, who does carry that liability for the costs associated with responding?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, I think that's exactly the purpose of the bill, is so that there is an agreement in place so that those activities are those costs and liabilities are spelled out. Otherwise, it's up to whatever negotiations the differing organizations have, and throughout the state, various organizations have agreements, but there's no statewide defined participation, so that if two communities that aren't normally operating with in conjunction with each other have the need to request assistance, they could. I know like Juneau periodically sends assistance to another community in Southeast. They may or may not have an agreement in place. Who pays for the cost for a barge to move the piece of equipment over there? That's already defined out under this agreement, whereas now they have to determine that each time. Who can fire an employee? Who makes the decisions? Who can request? Who can't request? Those types of things.
Did that bring any more?
It raises the other question, and I also read in here where subdivision could opt out of this program. And if a subdivision opts out, but they then get into trouble, and does people just don't respond because they're not part of this mutual aid system that you have, or what do they do?
Representative Osterman, through the chair, I think you probably hit it pretty accurately. I don't want to speak for a subdivision that might opt out, and I don't know why a subdivision would opt out. But yes, I think they're in a position where if they put out a request, a neighboring or a community somewhere else in the state might say, well, we have no agreement. We can't send our assets to help you even though you have an emergency. Because it's a local emergency, it's not a state emergency, so it's different differing bodies involved. Or if it's a state emergency, then you run into the issue of the same issues between the agencies and the state as well. Sure. But yes, that's a definite possibility, and I believe that has happened in the past few years, and I believe representatives that are on the phone from Fairbanks could address that pertaining to the disaster in Eagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sisner.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I guess just having gone to the town of Tanana right after the flood, and and having arrived weeks later, you really can see just how very vulnerable a lot of our communities are around Alaska with not very much going for them. And in previous testimony we've gotten from Homeland Security here in Alaska, it seems as if there's a pretty solid group of people out there that are really working to try to make positive that people get help when they need help. And here, when they need help, they really need it. It's really so much more dramatic than other places in the country. And I'm just wondering if there isn't maybe some particular events or a series of events that have really brought this about. This grew out of what?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, it's a discussion I've been involved in for several years at differing training and exercises for the need to have this type of agreement. I believe several of the individuals on the phone could probably answer if you want specific events that could probably provide you with more information than you would ever want to know about difficulties that they've had in providing aid across political subdivisions and responding to events better than I could.
Representative Sista, several years ago when they had the Big Lake fire, from Fairbanks, we sent fire departments down there. They were from all over. I think from down on the Kenai Peninsula, fire departments responded to the Big Lake fire. So there was quite a mix of different fire departments from all around the state that responded. So this is to address problems that they ran into at that time and questions, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, it is, and also much of this comes out of what happens in forestry. Much of our incident command system, our national NIMS, and several of our different things that we're doing today across emergency services have come out of the fire service pertaining to wildland fires and their use of multi-level agencies from federal, state, local, tribal governments to provide services all over the country and the agreements that they've had to put in place to do that. And again, this is providing the legislation so that within the state of Alaska we can provide these services and have the legislation that says you should have this in place and these are the types of terms that should be in the agreement.
Follow up a little bit more on that. We had a forest fire out of Fairbanks, and the Bureau of Land Management or Forestry needed a tanker, so we sent one of the city's tankers down there. It was an older one. It had a wreck on the way to the fire. The driver was injured, and the question came down is, when did the Forest Service become, or Department of Forestry become liable? Was it not till they showed up at the fire, or was it once they left Fairbanks headed to the fire? And there was quite a little argument and fight went on over that. So we've got to get these things where that we know what's going on, who's liable at what time, and who's taking on the responsibility for those type of things. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony today, Mike. And noting again that the fiscal note currently is zero, is there anything in here that provides, looking forward, if there's going to be an assessment that indicates various companies or fire departments or other responders may need, you know, the state, statewide, may require some additional trucks, ambulances, helicopters, fire removal equipment, communications gear, whatever, to be strategically located? Is there anything in here that this... as they do the study that is going to be looking at that, which would in turn then turn into some request for additional state funding?
Representative Miller, through the chair, I don't believe so, and I can speak myself probably most directly to communications equipment. And for example, that process is already ongoing, is already in place. There's equipment in strategic locations throughout the state, both within hubs and the larger hubs such as Fairbanks or Anchorage, as well as smaller remote hubs out closer to the villages, and also an inventory of equipment, for example, that individual agencies, for example, my fire department has equipment in our possession that we own that's available for the state to use in the event that it's needed to be allocated to another location, and the state already has that that information available. So all those types of activities are going on. Where this bill addresses is the need, though, in the case of, for example, if we send those radios and they get lost, who's responsible for that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's addressed by this bill. It's not the planning process. Those types of things are in process. I'm sure the division would appreciate more funding for that, but in the past have been able to rely on a fair amount of federal funding for those types of activities, and I'm sure that those will continue.
Okay. Other questions of Mike? Seeing none, thank you. Representative Osterman, did you have anyone more?
Maybe Mike's not the person to answer it, but I'd be interested in knowing the definition of political subdivisions as to whether it means what it means. We've got service districts and we've got et cetera within communities.
Representative Osterman, through the chair, political subdivision is defined in statute. The brief is it's a municipality or a community that is unorganized and has more than 25 people. I did ask the question of legal services, and I believe they may be available during today to answer a more specific question, but essentially a community that is unique in nature would fall under the village definition. So if you're looking at the larger area, you're talking about the recognized municipalities, and in the unorganized borough, you're looking at individual communities that may or may not be organized and incorporated.
Thank you.
Further questions, Mike? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mike. Any questions of Representative Flaggy by anybody also before we move on? Seeing none, then we'll move on to public testimony. And we had a question or two that were referenced to one of the people that is online. Brian Fisher, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
If you'd put yourself on the record and your affiliation, we had a couple people that had questions. Hopefully you heard those. Go right ahead.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Brian Fisher, and I am the Chief of Operations for the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management.
Did you hear the questions that were asked earlier?
I did. I heard I'll respond through the chair to the question about the fiscal note. We at the division fully support this. We helped craft the legislation. It is part of our day-to-day mission to coordinate resource support for local jurisdictions, local political subdivisions in the event of a disaster. So it's part of our day-to-day job. Our agency also serves as the primary staff support to the State Emergency Response Commission that was spoken about earlier. So as part of our regular job supporting the commission's efforts, we would take into account all of the work that we need to do, follow-on work if this legislation is passed, to come up with all the policies and procedures and forms and tackle some of the issues that still need to be ironed out with the reimbursement, those kind of things.
Okay, Representative,
what were
one of the other questions that were referenced to Brian?
Well, part of the question would be in those political subdivisions that opt out, and where does that leave them?
Thank you. Through the chair, the opt-out provisions are put in there to give some flexibility. In essence, our primary mission when there is any kind of emergency at the local level or that rises to a state disaster from my organization is to respond to any of those resource requests. What we always look to first is to provide the assistance needed as close as possible because of our geographical differences. Normally, in our disaster response, we're dealing with weather. So it's sometimes difficult to get things moved, say, from Anchorage to, say, for example, Panama, which was referenced earlier. So this system put in place allows Panama, in essence, to go upriver or downriver to get the assistance that's closest to them. It'll be there more rapidly, and that's what we're looking for here. In the absence of that, if a community chose to opt out, that by no means precludes them from coming to the State Emergency Operations Center, to our agency, to request support, and with all responses to emergencies like that, we'll attempt to find that support where we can.
Representative Osterman has one more question.
Yeah, Ms. Fisher, in reference to a statewide emergency, if there is a political subdivision that has opted out, how do you handle that?
Thank you, through the chair. we would respond with state assets where we could. If there was a political subdivision that opted out of the mutual aid system, in essence, we would not look to them to be the first provider of the resource needed in a political subdivision that requests. So, because of the issues that are addressed in this bill, the tort liability and workman's comp, those issues, because they wouldn't be ironed out, we wouldn't want to expose anybody to risk or put anybody in harm's way without some prior planning and processes in place. Another large issue for us, once a disaster is formally declared and we're looking at money to reimburse jurisdictions for their response efforts or to repair their communities, would be addressed through this. We would have the procedures and the agreements and reimbursement materials all in place that would be consistent with our additional disaster recovery statutes and regulations to allow us to more quickly get that money back to the community that provided that assistance. With a community opting out of it, we wouldn't look to them as the first source of equipment or whatever the particular resource is to provide that mutual aid. I'll caveat that with when there are life safety issues, when it's evacuations and we need boats or we need helicopters or something like that, if it's a life safety situation, we don't look to that. Whether somebody's a member of a system or not, we're certainly going to go find the right resources, whether it's through the Rescue Coordination Center or not, to get any life-saving resources to the community that's needed as fast as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Yeah, Brian, out of curiosity, just to throw a little something else into the mix, how important is Alaska land-based mobile radio for these different departments to communicate if they are responding to a different community or a different area of the state?
The Alaska Land Mobile Radio, thank you for that. The Alaska Land Mobile Radio system and our other interoperable communication systems are as integral as this bill is. If we're sending resources from, say, the municipality of Anchorage to the Fairbanks North Star Borough, it's important that we have the procedures in place to send those folks or send the fire trucks or the dozers, whatever it is. It's also as equally important that they have the ability to communicate with the Fairbanks North Star Borough when they get on scene so they can have an effective and coordinated response.
Hopefully it doesn't cost as much.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Brian, any other questions for Brian? Hearing none, thank you very much, Brian. Stick around. You might have some more questions before it's over with. Next, we'll go here in the room to Richard Etheridge, Fire Chief from Juneau, if you'd please come forward. Place yourself on the record and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, sir. I'm Richard Etheridge. I'm Fire Chief here at Capital City Fire Rescue, and I'm also the second Vice President for the Alaska State Fire Chiefs Association. I'll try and keep things brief because it sounds like you guys are getting a pretty good grasp on how important this bill is for us. The big thing that we look to is that it's a collaborative partnership between state, local, and federal authorities. This creates the framework for us to provide assistance and receive assistance, which is becoming more and more frequent. Right now, the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management is tasked with coordinating this effort and putting the framework together and distributing it statewide. So, you know, it's excellent that we have a designated group to manage this program. No department in Alaska has the ability to handle a major disaster completely on their own, whether it's something as significant as like the 64 quake or some of the major flooding that's occurred on the rivers. You know, we all have small budgets, we all have manpower and equipment limitations. This is a force multiplier that allows us to reach out to neighboring communities and ask for that help. State law already provides the ability to do mutual aid agreements between neighboring departments. Here in Southeast, you know, it's kind of hard to know which communities you're going to be working with. You know, typically we would expect maybe Haines, Skagway, Sitka, you know, Hoonah pretty frequently. But we just recently got a call from Thorn Bay down out of the Ketchikan area asking for assistance with the hazardous materials incident. We wouldn't have the foresight to think to reach out that far, you know, southeast Alaska to, you know, try and come up with a mutual aid agreement. So when they made the request for assistance, there was a lot of telephone calls back and forth trying to find out, do we have the liability, who's going to run this incident, who's paying for it, how are we getting there. Logistically, it's, you know, in Southeast Alaska, it can get quite expensive to move not only people but assets. So this bill would put the framework together so that we would know when Huna calls up and says, hey, we've got another major wildland fire going over here and we're burning things up. You know, we don't have to stop and ask all the questions and, you know, how are we doing this and who's paying for it. All that stuff's already pre-lined out. So we're getting those calls more and more frequently. This eliminates a lot of the administrative process. We've recently been called for two hazardous materials incidents in Southeast. And also we put a team of paramedics together to go to Huna just a couple years ago when they had the two officers slain. That had a major impact not only on the police force there, but it's such a tight-knit community that their EMS service was basically completely taken out of service at that point because they were all friends, and something that tragic has a huge impact. So we were able to send our paramedics over there, but it took, you know, calls to the city manager discussing wages and coverage and how we're getting taken care of while we're there. So this would be an excellent bill to help answer those questions, so when we do get the phone calls, we can respond much, much faster than having to chase down the administrative tasks. I just want to let you know that the State Fire Chiefs Association and Capital City Fire Rescue support this, and we hope to see this pass. Open for any questions.
Thank you, Richard. Questions, Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And my question is, it's really just based on the fact that I've been doing a lot of traveling myself and have worked from time to time working on emergency things. And here in Southeast, which is kind of your territory, but you're associated with people throughout, and this is a question that should be asked of a lot of folks, I suppose. It's not the big part of this, but we have neighbors, and you're talking about Thorn Bay. Well, you're talking about neighbors that actually become Canada, and actually it's Canada that's probably the most likely neighbor that we have. I don't think we're going to get much help from Siberia for some reason, but in those kinds of situations, do we in fact have some kind of relationship with Canada, with the territories, that kind of thing, to pull them in? Is this something that could be international as well as within our state?
Through the chair, we do have some agreements in place. Here from Juneau, we respond up the Taku River to the mining communities that are up there. So we have an agreement with just that particular group and through their border folks to allow our medevac helicopters to go in without having to check through customs. And I know that the Haines and the Skagway fire departments work with White Horse routinely, and we have had White Horse down here training with us on several occasions. So we do reach out to our Canadian neighbors.
Thank you.
Wow. Further questions to Richard?
Yes.
Representative Osterman.
Just a point the chief did mention, the 64 earthquake, and today is March the 27th.
Oh, wow.
In 3 hours.
Oh, man.
Further questions to Richard? Thank you very much for your testimony, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Also here in the room to testify is Kathy Wasserman of the Alaska Municipal League. Kathy, if you'd please come forward. Welcome, Kathy. Place yourself on the record, then we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. The League is in favor of House Bill 366. We, first of all, have non-voting membership on our board from representatives of other municipal groups. Sorry. Okay. I've always been so quiet. And the Fire Chiefs Association has a seat on our board, so we try to help them with all of their legislation. I'm going to give you a bit of a twist that's a little bit different, but I think Chief Etheridge also mentioned that. As a former mayor of a very small town out on the outside waters or close to the outside waters, there were many times that we got calls that would ask us to respond to a place like Elfin Cove, Gustavus, sometimes even Glacier Bay National Park. And the thing that I see about this bill, it takes away that one hour of hesitancy where we all stand around and go, oh my gosh, if we send a boat, we don't have enough money for fuel as it is. How are we going to get paid for the fuel? Do we have liability issues? Is something, if something goes wrong, are we liable as well as the municipality that called us or the agency? These things are already in place. We know what our role is. We know what we can do safely. I think there are very few times that any community fails to respond to another community, whether there's something in place or not. However, it certainly takes away that half an hour or hour of hesitancy, which could be all the difference between getting something done and not getting something done. Thank you, sir.
Well, we've been joined by Co-Chair Sadler, Representative Sadler. Welcome back. Questions of Kathy? Thank you very much, Kathy. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go. We have a lot of people online. We'll next go to Mike O'Hara from the Homeland Security and Veterans Affairs. He's online. Mike, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Yeah, place yourself on the record and give your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mike O'Hare. I'm the Deputy Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And my testimony has been taken up by the rest of the speakers. I'm kind of glad because I'll keep this very short for the committee. Brian Fisher, who works for me in operations, has done a great job. I just want to emphasize what Chief Etheridge and Kathy Wasserman had said. This is in its simplest form a pre-establishment of agreements for liability at tort issues and reimbursement of costs for the small to medium emergencies. You've heard from previous testimony that this, you know, they've had these small requests for equipment and personnel, and it's, recently, and it's getting more and more frequently. I just want to reiterate Brian's statement that we certainly do support this this piece of legislation. It enables us to work through the State Emergency Response Commission to develop the system, to work through the CERC, through the subcommittee at no additional cost to the state, because we're already doing this coordinated work. It's primarily just putting together another subcommittee that meets twice a year, and then subcommittee meets regularly thereafter to establish the system. With regards to Representative Miller's question about any additional funding down the line regarding the zero fiscal note, there will be no additional funding. The bill establishes this system, and that's it. Any additional equipment identified or needs of the community will be addressed later on in Homeland Security Emergency Management Grants, et cetera, or through CIP requests from the community directly. And then answering Representative Sisson's question regarding our relationship with Canada, we do have existing mutual aid agreements with the Canadian territories that are our neighbors, as you say, because sometimes they're our quickest responders, and also we're their closest neighbors. So we do have an agreement called the Pacific Northwest Emergency Management Agreement, the PENEMA Agreement, which establishes those mutual aid, already established understandings of who's going to pay for the resources, et cetera. Also, I want to say that, you know, many, many other states, I believe more than 25 other states have enacted similar legislation like this for statewide intrastate mutual aid assistance, and it's best practices that we're trying to put forth for the state of Alaska. As Brian said, he's available to answer any questions. I'm available to help answer any questions. I want to thank the committee for hearing it, and I want to thank the bill sponsors for putting it together. Mike Pasco did a great job. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Questions of Mike. Representative Osterman has a question, Mike.
Thank you for testifying, Mike. And I think that I heard you say that while this has a zero fiscal note, that Homeland Security will either be looking for grants, federal grants, or they'll be looking to come back through the capital projects to continue to fund this program?
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, that is a healthy no, sir.
I may have misstated, and I apologize for the misunderstanding. There is a zero fiscal note period. There will be no additional costs to put this interstate mutual aid system together. Representative Miller was inquiring about if there's discovered any additional equipment that a community may need or realize, that would be handled in a totally different system of federal grants that has nothing to do with this legislation. Sir.
Thank you.
Further questions of Mike? Mr. O'Hara, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Dennis Brodigan out of Wasilla. Dennis, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, place yourself in the record and your affiliation, and we'll hear your testimony.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This is Dennis Brodigan. I'm the Director of Emergency Services for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, and I am too calling to support House Bill 366. For all the reasons stated by the other testimony that you've heard, and in the interest of time, I won't go into any detail, but we do support this in its entirety.
That's it. Thank you, Dennis, very much. I don't see any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Kenai. Jim Butler, are you there, Jim?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead and place yourself and your affiliation on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Butler. I'm an attorney with a small law firm here in Kenai. I want to at first say I've been a member of the CERC as the sole public member for many years, but I'm not speaking on behalf of the CERC today. I'm trying to maybe provide the committee with a little different perspective on the importance of HB 366. My practice deals primarily with the world of emergency and incident management, and over the last 20 years I've worked on incidents from the local level, the regional and national, and still regularly participate in on multi-agency hazardous teams as well as corporate incident management teams. What I think I'd like to point out to the committee is that for several years, the legislative process and the agency process has focused on the concept of planning. And I think that's been important because it's essentially built a skeletal framework. And I think what this bill presents is a unique opportunity to now start putting the connective tissue or the muscle on make sure the bones work well and organized. And by that I mean creating the administrative mechanisms that allow the first responders to be able to efficiently and effectively respond. I salute many of my friends and colleagues I've worked with over the years who are first responders. I do not consider myself a first responder. I typically get involved when an incident goes from something that's involving a time clock to an incident that's involving a calendar that goes many, many days, weeks, and sometimes, in many cases, months. And when that starts to happen, you get new participants into the system, participants such as city managers, mayors, local officials, risk managers, lawyers, accountants, and insurance people. And each of them brings a certain skill set and responsibility to the table that unless there is a system in place that has been standardized across political subdivisions, can put them in a difficult place of trying to do their best on behalf of neighboring communities, but recognizing their obligations to protect the interests of their respective jurisdiction. So I think what HB 366 does and its companion in the Senate, it now creates the authority and the legal mechanism for municipalities to begin to explore that. In earlier testimony, we heard a little bit about fire management, and we also heard about the hazardous material teams that can now move between jurisdictions. Each of those have their own statutory authority, either through the Division of Forestry and the DNR statutes for fire management, and through the ADEC and the local hazardous material response program. What we're talking about are the events that deal with floods, the non-traditional, the things that we're used to, the ice jams, even in the case of an event such as what was described in Southeast, where someone just provided a few technical skills through paramedics to assist a community in their hour of need. So what I'd like to do again is just say I'd like to encourage the committee to not only advance the bill, but look for opportunities to support it in both bodies. I'd like to thank the sponsor for putting it in and your committee for considering it. I'd certainly be available to answer any questions if I could help clarify why I think this is so important. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Jim. Representative Osterman, did you want to ask a question about what happens if somebody opts out? He's an attorney. He might have an answer that might be different.
if he wants to answer, that's fine. I think we heard the answer, though.
Okay. Well, I guess, Mr. Osterman, representative through the chair, as an attorney, I'd have to say, well, it depends upon what side we're representing, correct? I think that illustrates the point is, I think the effort of going through and evaluating the ins and outs, if you will, of having this system work on the administrative level will hopefully resolve some of those types of questions. I think that will help empower communities to make better informed decisions on how they want to fit into the system.
All right. Any further questions to Jim? Thank you very much, Jim, very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Fairbanks. David Gibbs from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. David, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead and place your name and affiliation on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Yes, thank you. I'm over to the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. My name is David Gibbs. I am the Director of Emergency Operations with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I am testifying, obviously, in support of this bill. I should also add that the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly identified interstate mutual aid legislation as one of its legislative priorities in 2010. I just wanted to, without rehashing all the previous testimony, relate to you that in 2009, the ice jam flooding which devastated communities along the Yukon River caused us to get some intimately involved in that response. We were asked to provide fire apparatus to the city of Eagle. We also assisted with evacuation of a plane load of elders and children from Yukon River Village. And I think also Tanana was one of the villages involved with that. We also had additional requests for assistance that, because of the lack of agreement, we were not able to provide. These communities, of course, are geographically isolated from our borough, and therefore we never really anticipated the need for a mutual aid arrangement with them. The myriad of issues that arose with regard to authorities, compensation, liability, really affected our ability to provide timely assistance to these communities. The Yukon River flooding response clearly demonstrated to us the values of having these procedures and agreements in place long before a disaster occurs. Really, in closing, I just wanted to say that we really support this legislation, and I really thank the sponsor for introducing the bill. I'll take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to North Pole, Jeff Tucker. Jeff, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Mr. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the fire chief for the North Star Volunteer Fire Department. I'm also the immediate past president of the Alaska State Fire Chiefs Association. And again, I want to thank the sponsor for introducing House Bill 366. Most of the testimony that I had was has already been stated, so I'll make it real brief. Again, House Bill 366 is really the framework that we can build our emergency response, statewide interstate mutual aid plan response on. That is a critical factor that we need to help communities throughout Alaska. The State Fire Chiefs has been stated before, supports this bill, has been intimate in the development of the legislation, and we encourage the passage of this piece of legislation. And I thank you, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Questions, Jeff? Mr. Tucker, thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Doug Schrag in Fairbanks. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank yourself.
My name is Doug Schrage. Last name is spelled S-C-H-R-A-G-E. And I'm here as a member of the IMAS Committee for the International Association of Fire Chiefs. And also, I have a board seats on the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and the Western Fire Chiefs Association. I would like to begin by thanking you first for hearing the bill and second of all for this opportunity to testify. I support HB 366 for the reasons that have already been articulated and would make myself available for your questions. In addition to some of the testimony that's been provided, I would just add that one of the primary problems that we're trying to address here that I haven't heard discussion of is following Katrina, some of the horror stories involved with moving resources around the country, even from neighboring jurisdictions where we had managers and fire departments resource shopping for cheaper, although more distant, emergency responses. The other factor is that we've heard talk of successful interagency agreements between wildfire fighting agencies, and those exist here. And what we're trying to do is just expand an already successful model to an all-hazards environment. So beyond that, I just want to thank the sponsors and the supporters of this bill, and I will hold for questions if there are any.
All right. Anybody have any questions of Doug? I apologize for slaughtering your last name, Mr. Shroggy. If you see no questions, okay. Is there anybody else in the room or online that would like to testify? Seeing none, then I will close public testimony. We're back to the committee for discussion. Is there any discussion amongst the committee members? Sure. Representative Osterman.
And what we're working under, the A version, is that correct?
Version A.
It's no change from
right here. I have a motion to move this bill from committee.
Mr. Chairman, I make the motion to move HB 366 version 27 LS1450-A from committee with attached bill fixed note and individual recommendations.
Any objection? Seeing none, then we have moved House Bill 366 from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease here while we sign the bill and get ready. Senate Joint Resolution 14, sponsored by Senator Wilkowski. Here to present Senate CS for Senate Joint Resolution 14 is Senator Wilkowski, and from his staff we have Kendra Foster. And please come forward, place yourselves on the record, and we'll hear your presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm a state senator representing Northeast Anchorage, and this is a resolution urging the United States Department of Defense to protect military bases here in Alaska and the military personnel in the state from for the defense and protection of the state and the nation. We're not saying that the Department of Defense owes Alaska any bases. We're not saying that they should be doing this necessarily because it's good for our economy. We're saying that predominantly it's good for the nation's security. And I'll just go over a few things, Mr. Chairman. As you all know, this stems from the proposals that we heard, the suggestions. We don't know for sure, but the suggestions that there will be two base realignment and closure rounds in the next several years, one in potentially 2013, one in potentially 2015. Just very briefly, BRAC is the acronym for Base Realignment and Closure. It's a congressionally authorized process by the United States Department of Defense to reorganize its base structure around the world to more efficiently and more effectively support our forces and increase operational readiness and facilitate new ways of doing business. That's the definition according to the Department of Defense. And some of the major elements of the BRAC process in 2005 we went through, the first thing that they do is they go through a threat assessment of the future national security environment, followed by the development of a force structure plan and basing requirements to meet those threats. And then they have some legally mandated selection criteria that they look through to determine which installation should be realigned or closed. This is what happened in 2005. And at that time, there was a suggestion to consolidate Elmendorf and Richendorf, Elmendorf and Fort Richardson, which did happen. There was also a recommendation to close Eielson, as you know. And the community came together and made a very powerful statement about the impacts of Eielson and closing Eielson, but also how important Eielson was. And this really, I think most in Alaska agree that the real threat here is to your community, Mr. Chairman. But I'd just like to point out a couple of things, and I would also recognize that we had a meeting with Senator Murkowski. She suggested this was something that could be helpful, but also another resolution to try to get the state on the record as a whole opposing the transfer of the F-16 Aggressor Squadron. We're not addressing that in this, but I do have a separate resolution which I'll be filing as Chairman of the State Affairs Committee and the other body to try to address that, and we've been working with members from the Interior Delegation on that. But really, this is aimed at protecting the base here in Alaska. Eielson is the one that I think most people agree could potentially be impacted. And just a few things for the record, Mr. Chairman, because these are important facts, I think, that need to get out, and we need to really get this message out to the world. Here's some quotes from General Hamilton back when there was back in 2005. Alaska sitting at the top of the world is within 9 hours of 95% of the industrial world. ISIN's 90,000 acres in Fort Wainwright's 1.6 million acres represent the best joint training spaces available in the U.S. Armed Forces. And then ISIN has 63,000 square miles of training airspace, the largest overland instrumented training range in the world. Some other facts presented by General Gimbel at the time are that there are only two deployment routes from North America to Eastern and Central Asia. The first is through Alaska, the second is through Hawaii and Guam. And of these two, the Alaska route is 1,800 miles shorter, which translates into a one-day advantage receiving combat aircraft from the West Coast and a two-day advantage from the East Coast. And some other facts about ISIN, Mr. Chairman. As you well know, ISIN supports NORAD and ground-based missile defense systems. Every day for more than 20 years, at least one KC-135 has been on short notice alert in support of interceptors protecting the sovereign airspace. ISIN secures the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Any Pacific theater war plan would fully involve ISIN in an air bridge role. In prior backgrounds, ISIN was categorically excluded in recognition of its critical function in reinforcing the Pacific and defending Alaska. Some of the advantages that ISIN offers are few environmental constraints, noise pollution, etc., compared to other bases. ISIN's fuel system is another base asset. It's completely self-contained. The crude comes right off the North Pole, North Slope. It's refined in neighboring North Pole, and it's piped directly to ISIN. ISIN supports a multi-million-dollar network of seismic detectors, which detect underground nuclear tests. It has a huge field storage capacity, large capacity parking ramp, and long runway. It's the eighth longest runway in the United States. And it's a self-contained base, making it very secure to terrorist attacks. ISIN's heat and electricity comes from its own power plant burning locally mined coal, and ISIN has an entirely self-contained water supply and water treatment facility on base. And so Alaska is very, very important to the security of the United States, and with this resolution we hope to go on the record and make that point clear to Congress, Mr. Chairman. And thank you. I'll stop right there.
Mayor Wilkowski, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. It doesn't specify ISIN or Joint Base ISIN or Richardson Elmendorf, but it leaves it to where we've got a multitude of military bases in this state, and I like it that it's basically addressing all of those, because we've got a lot of personnel and a lot of assets in Alaska that we've got to make sure we try to keep them all, because I think they're very important to the defense of our country. Questions of the Senator? Representative Osterman.
Thank you. I appreciate this resolution as well, and I think it's something we need to continue to push for as far as the location of Alaska, the strategic location of it. And it talks about military defense, and obviously the Coast Guard is kind of up in the air as to whether it's military or whether it's part of Homeland Defense or any of that stuff. And I'm just wondering, there's no reference in here of that, and it's probably one of your closest areas of defense, because they're out in the ocean and they're beating those things in both the Bering Sea and those kind of areas. So I don't want to change this if it doesn't refer or doesn't touch the Coast Guard at all, but at the same point in time, I thought maybe I'd raise the issue.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Representative Osterman, through the chair. It's an excellent point. Coast Guard is critical to our nation's security and our state security. I've just been informed by my staff, who was informed by Vicky Pierre, who's in the room, and you can ask him this question, that the Coast Guard is not considered in BRAC rounds, but Mr. McHugh Pierre can come on and testify to that.
That's fine. I just raised the issue because it's a good it is part of.
Further questions, Representative Sisna.
Yes, and I'm actually still developing this question. You know how this is. You look at this this kind of information that you come up with, the numbers you've come up with, kind of the size and scope of what we're looking at across the state. And I, as I think many of you know, have been involved with a sideline issue that has to do with security. And one of the things that I keep thinking about is that the security of Alaska is special, that it, in fact, is a much, it's a very unusual special in that we have an enormous quantity of land with enormous resources, astounding quantities of resources, with places that are not that far away from us that may in fact covet our resources, and that astoundingly vacant body of land. And we're not doing the kind of careful work, and actually Homeland Security has been doing some of this. They've been going out to communities and really trying to figure out where are our weak points, where are the community's weak points, so that they can stay strong, so that they can be ready to warn us, because they are our first eyes. They're the ones who will see what happens when it happens first. And the bases are exactly the same thing. And it does seem to me that maybe this is the first step, actually, of what really needs to be done in really doing an analysis of security for the United States with the state of Alaska, because it is a critical issue.
Thank you, Representative Sisson, through the chair. A famous Alaskan once said, you can see Russia from Alaska. And the threat, as the federal government is reevaluating where the world threats lie, they do lie right near Alaska, and they lie in the Pacific theater. And in reevaluating that threat, we've been told Alaska will play a very key role in that. Like I mentioned, we are within 9 air hours of 95% of the industrial world. We're very close when you're transiting from North America to Eastern or Central Asia. There's only two ways, two deployment routes you can go, and one is through Hawaii, and Guam, and one is through Alaska. And Alaska is 1,800 miles shorter, which saves you a day going from receiving combat aircraft from the West Coast and 2 days from the East Coast. So it does offer tremendous advantages. And as we, as a country, reevaluate the threat that exists out there, we're finding that it exists right off Alaska. And as a nation, we need to be prepared to defend our country and our state.
Follow-up, Representative Sisson.
Thank you. Developing an idea here. Sorry about that. But really, it is interesting, because the other thing that we have, just thinking in terms of the resources, is in fact the fact that we have the largest percentage per capita of veterans, of people who've actually served our country, oftentimes given a lot for that service. And actually, I've got to get my word in for airport security. I think we need to make sure that we're looking out for all of our people as well, and honoring them in the way that they need to be honored. And when we're looking at the resources, make sure that we don't forget the human resources, because they're critical, and they are very, it's generations now that we have throughout rural Alaska that really have been helping us defend the state and prepare for possibilities. They've put in all the White Alice sites. It's been huge percentages of the people in rural Alaska that have done those kinds of things. So, just for the next bill.
Thank you. Further questions there, Senator Welikowski, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, that's a question, really, as a comment. Do you plan to take comments? You want discussion?
Go ahead.
I thank the sponsor for bringing this forward. I think it's a very important resolution. In essence, what it does is defends the value of Alaska's military value to the nation. And also, and that's a primary reason, there's also ancillary economic benefits to the state. As you've listed, Alaska has innumerable benefits it brings to the mission. You know, the training ranges, the force projection to the Asian Pacific, the proximity, the training environment, and the climactic conditions. I think it would be I think one of the best decisions the country made was in purchasing Alaska. It was not Seward's folly, it was Seward's inspiration, and that's been Alaska has been able to contribute to our nation's defense way before we were able to contribute to our natural resources. So I think, in my opinion, it would be a big mistake to reduce the military presence in Alaska. If I'm wrong, then I need to be convinced of that point by point, and I think this is an important statement of our position. We've seen in Eielson's experience in 2005 that the assumptions the military makes and what savings they might have don't always pan out, and I'm looking forward to engaging with the Pentagon delegations who are going to visit Alaska in April to ground truth their assumptions of what kind of savings might be obtained and make them defend every cut. It's a defense in depth. I cross-sponsor this. I'm glad to do so. I think it's an important broad overview of states, an important principle for the state, that we want to defend the entire state, all bases, all missions. It's important to express this view that the best defense is a good offense when it comes to protecting our state. This is a start. I'm looking forward to working with you through JASC to continue this mission and have a good defense in depth to make sure that Alaska can continue to contribute its strategic position as well as everything else. So I'm looking forward to voting for this, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Wilikowski, thank you very much, and Kendra for being here to make the presentation. Seeing no other questions, we'll open this up to public testimony. First, we have McHugh Pierre. If you please come forward, place yourself on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'd just like to say that the resolution is spot on. It's consistent. We appreciate DMVA working with the Senator and with you guys through your interest in this topic. We need to maintain a consistent message, and that message is the strategic value to the focus of our military. And the focus of our military is on the Asian Pacific now, as announced by the President and the SecDef in February, and we need to emphasize that point. This does it, and we're going to continue to lay a strong foundation to support Alaska and all of the critical resources that we have here. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cisna.
Thank you. I'd love to ask, because you probably have it, and that is the assets that we have in the veterans that we have in the state and communities in the state that you've maybe been a part of in investigating, not investigating, working with communities in some of our more remote areas of Alaska. Can you talk to how this could possibly affect and maybe have ways to help the people who are out there that actually have done a huge amount for the state but could continue to do more?
Through the chair, Representative Stinson, I think this absolutely underscores the fact that we need to support the logistics that it takes to defend Alaska, and this is part of that. And this clearly states the value and the space that we have that is unparalleled. JPARC, which is referenced in this resolution, 63,000, 67,000, I'm not quite sure, square miles. That's the size of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Maryland all together. That's just unheard of anywhere else in the country. So we need those airstrips at King Cove. We need the small pieces that are around the state to help support all of the other big pieces that we have and defend our shores.
All right. Further questions of McHugh? Mr. Pierre, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to off-net. We have Mayor Luke Hopkins from Fairbanks. Luke, are you online?
Yes, I am. I'm Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, North Star Borough. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 14. Of course, it has on the second page very specific information about what Eielson Air Force Base offers. And you've heard already the history of how Eielson became less of a base than it was before 2005. But I certainly hope that this resolution is passed out of committee today. I receive information that other states are sending the message forward to both the Congress and to the Department of Defense that they have the best position for rapid deployment in Eastern North Carolina. Well, I want to say that this resolution would get sent forward because we have great opportunities both for rapid deployment, for JPARC training, and very relevant that those in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere hear the message that our whole state of Alaska has strategic importance, I would say beyond what they would see even on the East Coast or West Coast. So that's well spoken to in this resolution. As we spin down to the current budget budget issues that are that have been presented, and the Department of Defense has responded, and we certainly hear and have been hearing for a bit about what about the relocation of the aggressor squadron from Eielson, and it's based on numbers for, of savings that have been pulled out of something probably in from 2005 information. I certainly question them, and we will be looking at this here in our community and also working with the AMFAS group. But having this message get out, I think it's even more urgent than it was back in early February. The site assessment team is showing up at Eielson and to Joint Base Elmendorf, Fort Rich, for just that look. And it's hard for the communities, it's hard for the state to get information into that group that will be evaluating it, but that's what we need to do, and this resolution helps that. So I'd be glad to answer any questions, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mayor. The governor did sign the supplemental budget that includes dollars in it for hiring a good for the state to hire a consultant firm that can help us out on all of these issues and research down a little deeper into the actual savings. So I'm looking forward to that possibility of having this help us out quite a bit. We have questions. Co-chair Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chair, Mayor Hopkins, just curious, has your municipality, your jurisdiction, engaged the services of any lobbyists or advisors in this issue?
Yes, through the chair, Representative, the Borough Assembly has authorized the expenditure of about $120,000, and of that money, we have secured both a consulting firm in Washington, D.C. area that was involved with actually producing the numbers that showed that the Air Force numbers in 2005 DAC actions through a hearing here in Fairbanks, the Air Force numbers were not accurate, and these were the accurate numbers. So that same team is here. They have incredible depth. And then also we've engaged local economic analysis specifically for housing issues, and other local information that, of course, consultants in D.C. won't be able to dig down into. So all that information would be sent up to the congressional delegation.
Would you be at liberty, through the chair, to follow up? Would you be at liberty to let us know who those consultants or local analysts are?
Yes, I would, through the chair, to the representative. The Information Insights is a group that also worked on the back 2005 issues, and they have also brought on Northern Economics firm, and Northern Economics is going to be looking at a number of the local social economic issues for us so that they can present that information as soon as they can get that compiled.
Out of DC.
Yeah, but and who is the DC organization?
Through the chair, Representative, the firm is called Public Private Solutions Group. They two individuals, as I said, they worked on that back information for a lobbying firm in 2005.
Good deal. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Further questions of Mayor Hopkins? Seeing none, Luke, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else online or in the room that would like to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 14? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony, and we're back to the committee. What's the wishes of the committee? Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move we pass CS for Senate Joint Resolution version 27-LS1299-B with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, we have passed Senate Joint Resolution 14 from committee, and I'd like to thank Senator Wilkowski for bringing this forward. I think it shows a real joint effort by the entire state to pull together from Anchorage to Fairbanks and include the entire state in that process. And with that, please stick around to sign the paperwork. And at 2:25, we adjourn this meeting of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee.